Welcome to everyone listening all around the world, all across the United States. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Sitting in for George, he's down south, way down south in New Orleans, at the Lee Harvey Oswald Conference right now. So I get to run the ship tonight from the command deck that is the Coast Studios right here in Los Angeles, California. And tonight, my guest is ghost and psychic expert Lloyd Auerbach, great friend of the show here at Coast. And for me, he is the perfect mid-October conversation. And this is Friday. And you know what that means. It's open lines all night long. So get ready for that. You can follow me right now on Twitter at JChurchRadio. That's what you want to do, at JChurchRadio. Twitter is always live to my left. And maybe, just maybe, you'll get your question read live on the show tonight. And I really want to get straight to it. This is Lloyd is one of those mid-October conversations that I really, really want to have. So I'm going to get straight to it. Sitting in for George, I'm your host for the weekend, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'll be right back with my guest, Lloyd Auerbach. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. I'm sitting in for George tonight. He's down in New Orleans. I'll be here for the weekend. And tonight, my guest is Lloyd Auerbach. And tomorrow night, I'm going to have Chris Medina and David Omen here. David Omen has the Omen House, which is next door to the Roman Polanski Manson murder house up in Saleo Drive here in Beverly Hills. So that'll be tomorrow night. And you're not going to want to miss that, so come and join us. But tonight it's Lloyd Auerbach, and he is one of the leading experts on ghost and psychic experience. And he's got a master's degree in parapsychology. He is the director of the Office of Paranormal Investigations. He's a professor at both Atlantic University and JFK University. And Lloyd also is the creator and instructor of the certificate program in parapsychological studies at HCH Institute. And he was recently appointed to the board of directors of the Rhine Research Center. He is the co-author with the late psychic Annette Martin of The Ghost Detectives, A Guide to Haunted San Francisco, as well as seven other books. One of them, the 30th anniversary printing, is going on right now. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Seven other books on the paranormal, and he is the consulting editor and columnist for Fate magazine back in 1991 to 2004. Like to welcome back to Coast our good friend Lloyd Auerbach. Lloyd, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Jimmy.
How are you? Now, it's been, and we were talking about this earlier, I don't know where the time goes, but it's been a couple of years since we've talked and since you've been on Coast. What have you been up to?
Well, I've been on Coast and with George, of course, but you and I haven't talked, and I had another book come out, you missed one, called ESP Wars, East and West, which came out originally in 2014, and we just reissued it from a new publisher this year. About the U.S. and Russian psychic spying programs. So that's one of the things I've been up to. And also readying through Llewellyn, coming up next year, two of my older books, my other older books, Psychic Dreaming and Mind Over Matter, will be released next year.
One of the things, I want to actually start off with a personal question.
Yeah.
One thing that I've always wondered, and you're the perfect guy for it, it's Halloween. Halloween is 2 weeks away. Does paranormal activity kick up this month?
No. But, you know, this is actually, it's kind of the topic of a course that I may be teaching, depending if we have enough students signed up for it. But this weekend, at the Rhine Research Center, we're doing an online class that starts on Tuesday night on Halloween fantasy and reality, paranormal reality. And what's, you know, Halloween's got this mystique around it, clearly as a holiday, the pagan holiday. It is the night when the veil between the spirit world and the living world is the lightest or thinnest. You know, that goes back hundreds, if not thousands, of years. And, of course, it's got this whole connection to the idea of life after death and folklore and all sorts of things. So there's this pop culture connection to Halloween that's gotten bigger and bigger as Halloween's become more and more of a holiday here in the United States. And along with that has been the interest of the media. I mean, it used to be the case before the internet kicked up a lot more stuff throughout the year that the month of October, every media outlet, television, radio, newspapers, magazines would focus on ghosts and things that go bump in the night because, of course, it's Halloween. And it became kind of a fun thing, but the reality is it's not activity is kicked up. It's back to who are you going to call? I would get normally more calls during October because we're doing more media. It's basically advertising.
So the activity is the same all year then, is what you're saying. People are just,
pretty much,
you know,
yeah,
more aware because of the media and it's Halloween.
That's correct, yeah. It just seems to be more of an awareness thing. It's people talking about it more because it's in the public consciousness.
And the other strange thing, and I've noticed this, Halloween is quickly becoming like everybody's favorite. It's like the favorite holiday of the year now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's the third most popular when it comes to Hallmark holidays or something.
Right.
At this point, but you think about it, it's really become this very secularized with, you know, it's not a religious holiday whatsoever. It's one where people can have fun, they can dress up, they can do fun things, they can decorate in ways that there has no expectations, where you can show off in really creative ways as opposed to kind of the limitations you have sort of at Christmas, and that's the only other time of the year you can decorate at all in very odd ways. People are very forgiving at Halloween. In fact, they're really interested to see what kind of creativity people get into. I mean, you're not going to do animatronics in your yard of a zombie crawling out of a grave at any other time of year.
No, I do it every day. You haven't been by my house,
no,
but that's
I have a couple friends who have Halloween all year round, and I'd love to have a Halloween store. I think that there are Christmas tree stores around. There should be Halloween stores open all year round.
Now, the other thing that I wanted to ask you directly too, as well, I don't think there's anybody better to ask, this crazy clown phenomena thing that is
yeah,
going around the world. Started here in the United States, it ended up going left and right and north and south, and now it's reached over to Europe. What do you think is really going on here?
Well, you know, I just was reading an article by someone. I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head. He's someone connected to the Bigfoot stuff who just happened to have looked into the folklore around the clown phenomena of the 1980s. There was something that happened in the 1980s where all of a sudden people were freaked out, thinking that clowns are driving around in vans or people dressed as clowns stealing kids. And there was apparently no evidence of any of that. And yet, without the internet, that little bit of folklore spread across the country. And something similar may have happened more recently, but there are people, it looks like there are people who are taking advantage of that. You know, people are going to do what they're going to do to freak other people out, and this is an opportunity for people to do that, unfortunately. And you know, while people may be afraid of clowns, I can't quite understand why. I grew up watching Bozo on TV in New York. The idea of being afraid of clowns, I don't get it. I understand that people are afraid of clowns, but people are certainly taking advantage of this. It could be, you know, in some respects, you can make them look scarier than zombies because zombies have been part so much of our culture now because of Walking Dead and iZombie and all these other, you know, Z Nation and all these other types of TV shows. Who's going to be afraid of a zombie but a clown?
Right, right. Well, the movie Killer Clowns from Outer Space was pretty scary. Okay, now let's get to the serious stuff. And I want to congratulate you first on ESP Hauntings and Poltergeists. That book, not only for me but for a lot of people, got the kickstart in their career and their research. And here it is. Did you have any idea when you wrote it that it was going to have this kind of effect on you know, your friends and people that you work with and other professionals across the country?
I didn't know it would have this kind of lasting memory. I knew that it was going to do really well because Ghostbusters was still in the public consciousness at the time. I was very disappointed that Warner didn't reprint it after it had been selling very well for so long. And I just didn't think, you know, I thought there would be someone else coming along with another book similar to that. And the fact is that I had my mentors and my predecessors who were talked about throughout that book. Bill Roll and Scott Rogo are two of the folks who were my mentors, and Carlos Osis was another one. Rogo wrote a lot of books, which some of them are in print. I'd love to see all of them back in print because his stuff still stands up today. And there are some other folks in and around the field of parapsychology who wrote books around this topic that really need to be known. And that's one of the other reasons I wrote the book out. I wanted to bring people's names back into the public consciousness again, not just my name. I've been given credit a lot of times for things, coming up with ideas because people read them in that book. But what they forgot to read or remember from that book is that I was talking about things I learned from people like Scott Rogo and Bill Roll,
right,
and Osis and John Palmer and other folks, you know, predecessors. Some of them are still alive today.
Right, right. And the other aspect of it, you just mentioned Ghostbusters, right?
Yeah.
And the new one just came out.
Yeah.
When I think of this entire genre, we all go back and think about Ghostbusters. What did you think about the new version?
I liked it better than Ghostbusters 2. I thought, you know, first of all, I do think, I really like the movie, and I'll be buying, I haven't bought the Blu-ray yet, but I will be buying it, no question. I do think that I really would have liked to have seen them, seen the movie as a passing of the torch, rather than a complete reboot. I think it really would have been better for a lot of the fans if the old Ghostbusters had said, we'll be in the background, you guys take over now.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen Rick Moranis.
Yeah. Well, you know, he wasn't going to be in it no matter what.
Right.
Yeah, but I just think that would have been nice. I tell you, it took me about a couple of hours after seeing the movie. I know I liked the movie, but I knew I was missing something. And what I was missing was the sarcastic craziness of Bill Murray's character, of Peter Venkman. No one in that movie was really snarky. And that was a big thing from that. When we think about Ghostbusters, I mean, that was a major piece of that, of the humor of that movie. This movie was funny. I think Leslie Jones' character could have been that, and I hope that if they do another one, they'll let her do that, because she certainly can be very funny in that way.
And the other ironic thing about this, not only with your book, ESP Hauntings and Poltergeist, but and Ghostbusters, but it led into where we are today with the way the media treats it,
mm-hmm.
The ghost adventures, all of the ghost hunting programs that are out there, and the groups across the country. Do you feel responsible for some of that?
Well, you know, I think that the impact of that movie was felt in a good way through the media. This movie came out in 1984, and I was doing public information, media consulting, connect with the media for the JFK University Parapsychology Program at the time. And we got asked a question we had never been asked before when a popular movie came out. And that was, we've seen the movie, we know you guys don't do that, what do you really do? Now, with other movies like, you know, Poltergeist and the Amityville Horror, they wanted to see, the media all wanted to go to a place like that where stuff would fly around, which is, you know, when you think about it. And I put them on the spot and said, well, you know, if we could take you to a house like that, do you think we'd be underfunded?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So Ghostbusters really gave us the opportunity to talk about what really goes on. And that continued through pretty much most of the 90s. With shows like Sightings, Unsolved Mysteries pretty much treated it very, very fairly for the most part. There were a few other shows that did pretty well. But it was unfortunately, the reality show upswing that happened in the late 90s and especially in the early 2000s, which the producers, for whatever reason they thought, wanted to go with people who didn't know what they were talking about. Basically, they didn't want to talk to parapsychologists. They didn't want to talk to experts. They wanted to go away from actually what the guys in Ghostbusters were. They were professors at Columbia University. They knew what they were supposedly talking about.
Right, right.
So it was this shift away from expertise and a focus on personality.
And for the audience, is there a line in the sand between parapsychology and paranormal?
Well, paranormal represents what we study. The paranormal phenomena are things on the side of normal. And we specifically study things that connect to human consciousness, whether it's living or dead. So it's ESP, mind over matter, life after death, ghosts, poltergeists, all that stuff is paranormal phenomena or paranormal experiences. And we study those things. The so-called paranormal field, which has grown out of the TV shows, is one part fan base and one part experiential. People trying to have the experience, and another part some curiosity where people are trying things out, but they really are not coming. I'd say a majority of them, there's some really good people out there, but majority are not coming at this with any interest in what has come before beyond the TV shows. And if you're just following supposed methodology, which is not even methodology, you see on a TV show, which is edited by and run by TV producers who have no background in the subject whatsoever, you're not understanding what's out there, what we've actually figured out, what we haven't figured out, how we use equipment, what we get with the data, and even how to run an investigation. Visit to a place is not an investigation.
And what is the definition of parapsychology?
Parapsychology is a study of a phenomena of consciousness, experiences of consciousness, that fall under the category of psychic, which are perceptual experiences of our perceptions, experiences of interaction without the use of the normal senses or our physical body. You know, you move something without picking it up physically with your hands. So we study extrasensory perception, which is information coming to you or going from you without the use of your normal senses or normal perceptual processes. We study psychokinesis, or mind over matter, the idea that consciousness, our minds can directly affect matter. And we do this all the day, every day. There's that mind-body connection, which is definitely psychokinesis of a sort. So it includes psychic healing, it includes telekinesis, it includes metal bending, all sorts of things affecting computers with your mind. And then we study survival of bodily death, the idea that consciousness can leave the body or potentially survive the death of the body and still be able to communicate. So there where you're talking about, of course, apparitions or ghosts, your death experiences, out-of-body experiences, and also reincarnation experiences, because it's consciousness being reborn in another form.
When it comes to telekinesis and those aspects, all of us are, totally fascinated by that. But the other part, when it's mind over matter, when we're dealing with spoon bending, have you ever seen anybody bend a spoon without touching it?
Yeah, actually, I have. I have seen that. I've also seen, we've run spoon bending parties at JFK years ago, and I've run them in a few places. I've run them for the Forever Family Foundation, which I'm president of. It's an organization that supports spirit mediumship and research in life after death. And for the most part, in those situations, people are, in fact, touching the spoons. But what you end up with is deformations or bends or breaks or shapes that kind of don't work given the type of metal it is, the pressure that people are putting on it, and sometimes even the structure of the metal, such as bending, flopping over or crushing the bowl of a spoon given the curvature of it. So there are certain things that kind of come up in that. And I have seen, even with people just holding the end of a utensil, seen the utensil flop over. Now, on the other side of it, I'm also a mentalist and trained magician and have been doing that for almost as long as I've been doing parapsychology, and I know the best fake metal benders in the world. So there's a lot here that one needs to look at when we're talking about metal bending.
And the other fascinating thing, we're going to be headed towards a break, but is ESP and reading of the mind. Right now, do you know what I'm thinking? Do you have that ability? And with this connection that we have through the phone system right now, does that aid in that?
Well, first, I'm not a psychic. The mentalist thing is a different thing altogether. It's not being psychic per se. And people don't really read minds. You can sometimes pick things up from people. Some people are really good at doing that over the phone. Some people are really good at doing it on Skype, and some people are only good at doing it in person.
That's right.
It just really depends.
Yeah, I've often wondered, what would aid that, and what should I be scared of?
Well, first of all, it's amazing. People are afraid of psychic abilities. They're afraid of ESP, which is really interesting, including a lot of psychics. And some people are afraid. I've heard from the diehard disbelievers, a couple of them, have said to me that if people suddenly became psychic, or if we said that ESP was real, all of a sudden everybody in the world would be psychic. It's like if they said that there was something here, you're turning a switch on. Like, that makes no sense whatsoever. It's not like we're going to somehow find a pill for everybody. Everybody has different degrees of psychic ability. It's nothing to be afraid of. We can easily block it. That's one of the things we have learned, is how to block as well. so you're kind of unreadable in that sense.
Yeah, let me jump in right there. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, Lloyd, I want to know if we should ghost hunt our own homes. And would you recommend that? Our guest tonight, Lloyd Auerbach. I am your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach has been in the field for over 35 years. He focuses on education and field investigation. That's what I'm here to do with all of you tonight, is to learn. We're going to get our learn on when we come back with Lloyd Auerbach. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. You can follow me right now on Twitter at JChurchRadio, and you just might get your question read on the air. Our guest tonight is Lloyd Auerbach. And Lloyd, right before the break, I had asked, is it a good idea, you know, to ghost hunt in our own home? Do we really want to know what's there, number one? And then two, right after I said that, I get this tweet from Cher, and she says, I've lived in a haunted house, and I'm convinced some kind of trickster, ghost, or poltergeist, perhaps, is there. People want to know, is it a good idea to go and ghost hunt your own home?
Well, first of all, assume that your house doesn't have a ghost, because the evidence is that the vast majority of actual ghosts are, I'd say like 99% of ghost encounters are people who show up to friends, loved ones, relatives within minutes, if not at the most couple of days of when they die, to say goodbye. And then they're gone. There are a few who stick around. Very, very, very few. Now, the idea of a haunting, however, is different. We consider a haunted house or a haunted place as being different than a place that has a spirit or a ghost, because what you're dealing with is what ghost hunters like to call residual hauntings. It's information of the location that has been recorded into the environment that we living human beings are capable of picking up and kind of replaying in our heads.
Right.
And it's often very highly emotionally charged. It can be, and most people pick up positive and negative, but most people notice the negative. They don't notice the positive. So it can be something as, it can be nasty, like the previous owners of your house used to have knockdown, drag out fights. Nobody died. Nobody got physically that hurt. But the emotions between those people made it really, really, really bad and icky to live in that house. As opposed to people who have a really, really nice relationship and people who really have good parties, they leave a really good vibe behind. So that's the kind of thing that you might look at for your home. But I wouldn't even go looking for ghosts, because if there's one anywhere in your neighborhood and they think you're looking for ghosts, they're going to show up.
When you're watching one of those shows, which yeah. I do, and I enjoy them. I do. They're fun. But when somebody's watching those and they see the equipment, the digital recorders, and and they want to go down to the local store, get one of those recorders, and come home and start marching through the house, instigating the spirit world. It just doesn't seem like a good idea to me.
Well, part of it is you're asking for somebody to communicate with you, whom, you know, you're kind of putting a call out. And you may not get anybody related to your house whatsoever. That's number one. But more importantly, all that EVP stuff, there is a real issue for EVP, electronic voice phenomena. There's two issues. One is that a lot of times the sounds may sound like voices. They may sound like words. People put patterns to them. That's what human beings do. And they really are not spirit voices at all, or even paranormally created voices. The other thing is that we have decades of data that shows that living people's unconscious minds can affect machines, digital devices, analog devices, random event generators, random systems, and it's just as likely that your expectation and desire to get a voice on that recorder, when you get the voice, you created it.
That's scarier than a ghost, if you ask me.
Well, you can be, because your unconscious can kind of
screw
around with you. That's the basic problem with any kind of spirit communication. If it's really not a spirit, if it's you, if it's your unconscious playing with you, you have to kind of look at that. The way to look at it is that these could be representations of your unconscious. It's kind of like having a dream. So look at it metaphorically. Don't look at it. Don't take it literally. But, you know, on the other side of that, I watch some of these ghosts. I have people play audio for me every so often, and they said they went into a house and there was evil in the house. I said, well, how'd you know there was evil in the house? Did the people report being heard? Did they report anything? No, we got an EVP and there's a growl on the tape.
Right.
Yeah, I said, well, number one, how do you know there's not a ghost dog?
Which is scary, okay.
Why is that scary? I mean, I go to people's homes and the dog growls at me or barks at me because I'm a stranger.
Right, right, right.
Why couldn't that spirit be protective of the house? Why does it have to be such a nasty thing? And they're not going to be able to do anything to you anyway. The other thing is, sometimes those growls are, sometimes, quite often those growls are people's stomachs growling.
And why is it that we want to be scared? Why is it that we have this anticipation, and then when we do hear it, it freaks us out? Why?
Well, you know, look at horror films. Amusement park rides, we pay to be scared. We pay for these things. It's a little silly. You know, human beings are adrenaline junkies to some extent. So the fear actually generates adrenaline, and we get a thrill. There's a lot of ghost hunters who are out there, or people call themselves ghost hunters. They're really just thrill seekers. They're really trying to have an experience. They want to be spooked, or they want to be scared, or they want to be enthralled because they want a positive experience also. I won't say it's all negative. That's not investigating. That's having an experience, and as long as you're honest about it, that's perfectly okay. I have my problems with people who claim to be professionals, and they claim this and they claim that, and they don't even know how their equipment works. They don't know any of the science behind the phenomena. They don't know any of the research. They just make assumptions because it sounds cool.
Well, how do you handle a typical investigation?
Well, we start, unlike a lot of TV shows, we start with an actual experience. We don't go to, people ask me if I go to all these places that are on the TV shows that have been abandoned, like prisons and insane asylums and just sanatoriums where there is just all sorts. I don't go to those places. I have to have witnesses to talk to. I want to be able to talk to someone who's had an actual experience. Because unless there's an actual experience, the place, if it's an older place, it may be no more haunted than that other old house down the street where people are living and having no problem whatsoever. You need to be able to interview witnesses because you need to start, think of this as a criminal investigation, you need to start with a crime. And if it's a victimless crime, what are you actually investigating? You know, you're investigating a rumor and folklore and trying to have an experience. And that really doesn't work from a scientific perspective. It doesn't work from the parapsychological perspective either. So we start with the people, and the equipment, frankly, is there, if we're using it at all, to really document what's going on, to document the people's experiences. And for the environmental sensing equipment like EMFs, we're trying to look for correlations or connections between changes in the environment, patterns in the environment, and people's experiences.
What kind of equipment do you bring?
Pretty minimal. I bring mostly EMF, a couple different kinds of EMF detectors, because they've been the most correlative. We've found correlations in those circumstances, not to apparition cases, but to haunting cases, certainly. Digital, just an audio recorder, camera, video camera to document certain things, including we try to take notes and we try to document people's experiences. And I do have temperature sensors if people do claim that there's a cold spot, which almost never actually has a temperature, physical temperature change. It helps to have temperature sensing equipment, thermometers, in order to know that there's not a physical cold spot there. That's kind of a bit of folklore that psychics promoted and Hollywood promoted that everybody has taken as fact now.
Have you found a cold spot, though, or a hot spot?
We have had a couple cases where there have been unusual temperature changes. Nothing drastic enough to call it a cold spot, although one of my earliest cases actually didn't involve a ghost, but it was a house in Vallejo, California that, to this day, I don't know exactly what's going on because we never really got to get the kind of specialists, the geological survey people and other folks in to work on it. But this is a house in the middle of summer, and, out here in the Bay Area, it gets to 100 in the low hundreds. And I went to these folks' house in the afternoon, and the house was pretty hot. It wasn't air-conditioned. This one room, which they called the cold room, was 70-something, I think it was 76, 77 degrees, which sounds pretty warm, but compared to 102 degrees outside, it was actually pretty cool. And apparently in the wintertime, it was warm. It was the warm room in the winter and the cool room in the summer. And there was absolutely no reason for that I could determine. We really would have needed to get under the house to see if there was any, like a well or something putting up cool air. But that's the coldest spot I've had. Now, I also did have a case which we shot for Japanese television back in the early 90s, and actually did a TV pilot here for the States as well. And it was a family in Archer, Florida, that had a little girl's ghost. The house had a history back to the Civil War. The folks bought the house because it was haunted. They actually wanted a house with a friendly ghost. And while the medium from Japan was actually talking to the little girl's ghost, this was, again, in the middle of summer. It was 97 degrees in the house. It was 90-some-odd degrees outside. The house was, had ceiling fans. It was not air-conditioned. The room that the medium was in with the camera, we were sitting in another room watching on a thermal vision camera, actually, as well as a regular video camera. This is, again, for Japanese TV. And we actually saw the walls get cooler, and the room temperature had dropped while she was having the conversation with the little girl down to 75 degrees. So, of course, we all went in there because the house wasn't air-conditioned. And we did find that the heat was somehow moving into another room. There was another room that had gone up to 110, and you could actually feel the heat kind of displacing into that room. So that was a really interesting...
Wow, how would you explain a phenomenon like that? That's pretty interesting.
There's no explanation from a physics perspective. This was the second night we were at the house. The first night, when she was having a conversation with the little girl's ghost, we actually had a lot of other equipment. We had a battery of different kinds of EMF detectors, Geiger counters, microwave detectors. We had a geomagnetic sensing station, so a real professional one. We had thermal vision. We had everything except for temperature change was happening. We literally had every piece of equipment going off, which shouldn't actually happen in any circumstance with everything going off while she was having the conversation with the little girl's ghost. And so when this happened the second night, all I can say is that whoever or whatever was represented by the ghost that Mrs. Gibo said she was talking to was affecting the environment drastically, and my guess is consciously as well. And Mrs. Gibo had said in Japanese, this was translated for me at the very beginning of her session, that it was too bad it was so hot in the room, and then the room starts getting cooler, comfortable for her. So the girl used psychokinesis, mind over matter, to affect the heat in the room.
And you also mentioned that you take audio recorders with you. Are you going old school? Are they analog, or are you using digital?
Mainly using digital these days, just because it's easier.
And you,
I'm not really looking for EVP. I am using the audio recorders really to document what goes on.
But have you ever accidentally caught an EVP, even though it wasn't your intention?
Yes. Yeah, we have. At the USS Hornet, on video, actually. And... in a couple other places, too.
And what was the EVP? Do you remember?
The one on the Hornet was actually absolutely a human voice, but not making out anything recognizable as far as most of us were concerned. It sounded more like...
And
and it's funny, I've played it for people, and I've had people who listen to EVP, a lot of EVP, have told us what it says, and we get different responses from different people, and it's really very funny,
actually. How does an EVP get captured if there isn't a physical vocal cord to create it? Is there some kind of EMF or electromagnetic thing going on inside of the digital device?
Remember, the EVP goes back well before digital also.
That's right.
Yeah. So the definition of electronic voice phenomena is that the voice is created inside the device, either directly on the recording medium,
right,
whether it's tape or the flash drive, or somehow in the mechanics of the device itself. It is not an acoustical sound.
Right.
That's the definition of it. Again, we have decades of data showing that living people can unconsciously affect and consciously affect devices. So it would be created by psychokinesis, whether it's a spirit's psychokinesis, mind over matter, or a living person's psychokinesis, or a combination. One of the things that I've noticed over the last number of years in meeting ghost hunting groups and talking to people here and there, it seems that there's, with almost any team there who does EVP, there's one person on the team that almost always gets EVP, no matter where they go, even though the rest of them don't. Now, that suggests that there's something about that one person, that one person either is prone to creating it themselves because of expectations, more likely because there's also sometimes other evidence that there actually is an apparition there, that person is unconsciously acting as a medium, is kind of mediating the effect on the system.
Now, and what about the reports of actual voices that are being heard? You know, the famous, you know, get out, you know. How is that generated, and is that some type of psychokinesis or telekinesis?
Well, you know, there's two types of voices. One is the ones that get recorded. For recordings, you have a recording that happens, the EVP, the recording that happens in the device. It's not an acoustical sound. If there's an actual voice that people hear, the question then becomes, does it get recorded? Because I've heard an awful lot of experiences from people, and I've even had this experience myself, where people hear the voice, but there is nothing recorded on the audio recording because it's a psychic voice. It's a psychic sound. Think of it this way. It's mind-to-mind. It's creating the sound in your head. It's not creating an actual physical sound.
What is the difference? And we're going to head to a break here, and I'm trying to get educated. And these are questions that we all have, right? And you're the guy. What's the difference between a ghost and a spirit?
Well, if you talk to mediums, these are just terms of the same thing, frankly, when it comes right down to it. But when you talk to a lot of mediums, they will use the word ghost for someone who has died, who is here, you might say, on Earth. They haven't gone anywhere. They haven't crossed over.
Right.
They will use the word spirit for the ones they're communicating with who are projecting back from the other side. We tend to use the word apparition in representing anyone who is here, whether they are, you know, manifesting from the other side or not. That's an apparition.
Now, my mom passed away last year, and she was nuts in a cool way, right?
Okay.
It taught me everything, and ran a Ouija board when I was like 5 years old, you know, and I would just sit and watch her. And if anybody was going to come back and talk to me, it would be her. But she hasn't yet. Is there anything that I need to do?
You might want to try to talk to one of our mediums from the Forever Family Foundation. We've got a certification program that we've run through. It's foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and there is a link to the mediums who have been certified on that website who you can contact. They will work. Many of them will work by phone or by Skype. You can't always guarantee they're going to connect with the person you want to, because you can make a phone call, but if the person doesn't want to pick up,
right.
And well, that's not going to happen.
I'll have to check that out. We're going to head to a break right here, and we'll take some phone calls when we come back with the one and only parapsychologist, Lloyd Auerbach. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM.